are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are, and you are listening to us in, what, 80-degree weather out here in Los Angeles?
I thought you were going to say in stereo. I thought you were in 80-degree, yes. I don't know. It's toasty.
It's very toasty. Yeah. Very nice.
I had the top down on the car today, and it was a little...
Does that mean you didn't wear a shirt? Or?
Yes, I was topless. I was topless in the car, yes, because, you know, that's exactly what I want to do at my age.
Only in L.A.
With the upper body that I have. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Two guests in studio today and one on the phone. The first in studio being a multiple ovation and L.A. Drama Critics Circle Award-winning choreographer slash director who recently choreographed the smash hit When You Wish, the story of Walt Disney, which I loved. I told you, we talked about that on the air, how much I enjoyed it. And who is currently directing and choreographing The Wrong Man, an underground musical. Please welcome Lee Martino.
Hello, Lee.
Hello, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good.
Welcome.
How are you?
Welcome. Welcome.
Hello, Paul.
Nice to meet you.
And who is she directing?
Michael?
Well, that would be our other in-studio guest, who also wrote and is starring in the very same show, The Wrong Man, which is the inaugural production of the Skylight Theater Company. Playing at the coincidentally named Skylight Theater at 1816 and a half North Vermont Avenue in Los Angeles and opening on January 25th. Please welcome Ross Golan.
Hello.
Mr. Ugin. Pleased to meet you.
Oh, it's nice to meet you
Ross,
guys.
Thank you for coming by.
It's a butterscotch day.
It is.
We're going to talk about that later, butterscotch day, yes.
And we also have someone calling in for a little piece that we're calling Chatting About Cheetah.
Chatting About Cheetah,
yeah, as in Rivera.
Yes.
How cool
exactly.
is that?
I know.
But
I know.
Before we get to our guest on the telephone, Paul, how was your
week?
Yes,
we will introduce her shortly.
Yeah.
She's sort of waiting in the electronic wings for
yes.
us. It was good. It was good. Keeping busy. Very, very exciting news about the short film that I worked on. Cannot say as yet, but it's all good news, so we hope to talk about that next week.
Sounds very tempting, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it's good news. Very, very, very exciting, but
I'm
just going to have to keep people on the edge of their seats, because I know they are. They're all a tither.
The name of the film?
I'm sorry. The film is called The Beating. It's a short film we did about bullying and mental illness and vigilantism and all those lovely,
fantastic.
You know, hum and a tune topics.
And you not only wrote it, but you also
started
it.
But I'm in it, yeah. And it's good news. So we're very, very excited about it, but more details to follow. And how was your week?
We're in the midst of LA's Next Great Stage Star, which is a musical theater competition that we produce every year at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal in North Hollywood.
Where is it? Where does it take place, Michael?
Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right. On Lancashire Avenue,
Lancashire
right next to the El Portal.
Yes.
Do I get my $5 now?
You do.
Okay.
Yeah, at the end of the show.
Yeah.
So we're in that, and Lee was just with us last week as one of our esteemed panel of judges for this competition.
That's where I saw her name. It was in the program.
Judges pass through the competition to determine who will become LA's next great stage star. So we're grateful to Lee and all of our colleagues in this business of Broadway musicals in Los Angeles. So,
and what year is this for you of doing that?
This is year eight.
8 years. And it's just like a huge hit now. It's just always...
Well, it's a very magical number for us this year because 8 of our former contestants have already now made their Broadway debuts.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Very exciting.
That's saying something.
That's
you know what I like about it, Michael? And I said this to you before, but I'm going to say it again. It is a competition, but in name, I want to say name only, but it's very, very encouraging. And there's no, you know, on these shows, so much of it, a lot of it can be very mean-spirited and very, you know, in a popularity contest. And it's a very encouraging, nurturing thing for young artists.
Well, it is. I mean, we always ask of the judges to be specific about what they're talking about, to deliver the information of the performance they've just witnessed by the contestant in a supportive kind of way, you know, yeah. that they can relate to and take that information home and bring it back the next week and give a performance that incorporates what they've, you know, been told on the previous week. Yeah. So,
you know, I was actually going to compete, but then I wasn't able to. I had a conflict.
What would that have possibly been?
The problem is I can't sing or dance.
Okay.
I'm here all week, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry. Okay.
Well, you know what? I think we should get to her.
I think we should. Let's talk to the lady who is so patiently waiting on the phone. Would you give her an introduction, Michael?
Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, waiting on the electric telephone, we have Cheetah Rivera's representative of many, many years, representative of publicity and public relations, and how wonderful a job she has done through those years. Ms. Rivera will be performing to Cheetah, a legendary celebration performances. It's a U.S. national tour, really. The engagements are coming up here in Los Angeles this month on January 25th and January 26th. So would you please welcome Miss Merle? Am I saying that right?
I believe so, yes.
I hope so. Merle Freymark.
Hello, Merle. Are you with us?
I could barely hear you.
You could barely hear me. Well, let me work on that. I bet I can do that a little better. Hang on 1 second. We'll try that. How's that? Better?
That's much better.
Oh, good, good. Welcome, welcome.
Welcome.
It's good to have you with us.
Great, thank you. It's lovely to talk to you guys.
Well, now, we were just talking about the weather out here, Merle, being some 80 degrees. What is it back there in New York today?
I can't hear you at all.
You can't?
You can't hear us.
Well.
How is that possible? Let's try that again. How is that? A little better?
Yes.
Okay.
There we go.
You know what? It's my fault, Merle. It's a whole new system here, and I'm telephonically challenged. So thank you for your patience. Michael, would you repeat that question?
I was just saying, Merle, at the top of the show, we were speaking about the temperature in Los Angeles today being some 80 degrees. What is it like in New York today?
Oh, it's in the 40s. It's and kind of gray. It might be a little snow later, but it's not freezing. You know, the other week we had 5 degrees, so... This is springtime for us.
Oh, my goodness. Can you really tell the difference between 40 degrees and 5 degrees? Is it really?
Oh, yes. And I don't want to tell you what regions of my body can tell the difference, but that's a whole other show.
Too much information.
That's what we're about.
Too much information.
Merle, tell us about what people could expect. It's Cheetah Rivera in Cheetah, a legendary celebration, a unique solo concert event celebrating the Broadway Legends 80th birthday, and can you sort of give our listeners a tease on what they can expect at the show?
Oh, absolutely. Well, if you've never seen Cheetah Rivera perform, I don't know what planet you're living on, but because obviously she's been in the Los Angeles area many, many, many times. But this is a concert which was created this past year for her 80th year. Of course, we don't say the number because she's really 36.
Oh, okay.
And we like to keep it that way.
I got you.
So, but this concert is her and her musical trio, and basically she sings all her hits from her shows, which is what people want to hear.
Oh,
you know,
of course.
She'll sing all the songs that we know and love from Chicago, especially, you know, All That Jazz. I mean, that's her one of her signature songs.
Sure.
And she does a tribute to her dear friends, John Kander and Fred Ebb. These are the men who are responsible for such shows as Chicago, Kiss of the Spider Woman, The Rink, and the upcoming musical, The Visit, which she will be doing at the Williamstown Theater Festival this summer. She's done it previous to this, but this is just another incarnation of it. And The Visit is the last show that Kander Ebb and Terrence McNally wrote together because, you know, Fred Ebb passed away a few years ago.
Right. And we had,
but when she comes out there, she'll be singing, you know, and what's interesting is no matter what size the stage is, she can't sit still. She has to move around and move those gorgeous legs of hers, and she gets the audience revved up. And the minute she starts to sing America from West Side Story, the audience goes nuts.
Oh, of course, of course.
Well, but, you know, that's her signature song also. That was the original Broadway show that made her a star. and she hasn't looked back since.
Yes, I saw a piece on her recently on the CBS News Sunday Morning, and she was discussing that. I want to give the listeners out there the two locations closest to the Los Angeles area where this production performance is going to take place. The first, January 25th, is at the Valley Performing Arts Center in Northridge, which Michael and I have seen a number of shows.
Beautiful, there. Beautiful venue.
Beautiful venue. And their website is valleyperformingartscenter.org, and you can call for tickets at 818-677-3000. And Michael, tell them about the other one there.
The Huff Performing Arts Center in Glendora, California, and that's a 2 p.m. Matinee performance on January 26th, and you can get tickets by going to HUGHPAC.com and or call their box office at 626-963-9411.
Yes, and we should also send some very good thoughts to the people in Glendora right now because they're experiencing a major fire.
Yes, I know that.
And
oh, really?
Yes. It's they've evacuated some homes up there. So we'll send good thoughts to those people in Glendora.
Oh,
also,
dear.
Shortly after that, and still not too far away, February 21st, the McCallum Theater in Palm Desert, California. And their tickets, that's McCallum Theater. Theater has the R-E spelling, McCallumTheater.com, and their box office, 760-340-2787. So really three local performances.
But in California alone, she's doing the Venetian Room at the Fairmont in San Francisco on February 23rd. I would love to be there for that because that...
She's looking forward to going back. She hasn't been to the two in your area, but she's. We've been to the McCallum, and we've been to the Venetian Room, and she just loves it in both of those places. And then she's also playing at the Harris Center in Folsom.
Right.
So,
Merle,
as long as she's on a stage, she's happy.
She's happy, and we're happy as well. Can you give, does she have a website specific to her that listeners
can
go to?
Yes, I was going to say, the tour dates and ticket information is up in the calendar on CheetahRivera.com.
CheetahRivera.com. And Merle, we have, thank you so much. We have actually two other guests that we're going to get to here, but we thank you so much for taking the time to call us. And,
absolutely, because everybody who goes will have a great time. They're going to hear songs that they know, and she is an inspiration to everyone.
She is, and we will give this information out about ticket sales again before the end of the hour for any listeners who missed it at the beginning. But
terrific.
So nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Merle.
You too. Thank you very much. Have
bye-bye
a good day.
Now.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, she's very sweet.
Lovely lady. She's been with Ms. Rivera for 30 years.
Yes, but we don't say that.
No.
Because we don't give up that, because she's only 36.
Make her
so
six
as a child.
Started,
yes, exactly.
Both of those ladies.
So, Michael, we have two guests who are with us who are sitting here so patiently, so why don't we get to them?
Okay.
And shall I introduce? Why don't I do that? I'll take the duties here.
All right.
Our first guest in studio is a four-time Ovation Award winner. She has directed and or choreographed such productions as the one we mentioned earlier, When You Wish, The Story of Walt Disney, American Misfits, Oklahoma, Nuttin' But Huttin', Hello My Baby, Life Without Makeup, Kiss Me Kate, if only to do some shows we've heard
really?
Of, you know, Falling for Eve, and a multitude of others. She has also worked in television, animated features, live events, and many benefits. She is the winner of 3 Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle Awards and the recipient of the Joel Hirshhorn Award for Outstanding Achievement in Musical Theater. Please welcome Lee Martino.
Wow. I'm exhausted.
I should have put some punctuation in there.
Wow.
That's quite a list.
You did a good job, Paul.
So how are you, Lee?
Welcome,
I'm good,
Lee.
Paul. How are you, Paul?
Good.
A pleasure meeting you and pleasure having you here.
So you are taking on something that's a little different, right?
Yes,
I mean,
very different.
This is a very different type of musical, The Wrong Man.
The Wrong Man.
And how did you become involved with The Wrong Man?
I became involved with this with my good friend Susie Dietz.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year and a half ago, Susie Dietz and Gary Grossman said, there's this person that we'd like you to hear singing these songs that he wrote. And especially whenever Susie wants me to do something, I know it's going to be...
Yeah.
Perfect. So I went and heard Ross present his material, and I connected to the material and to Ross immediately. And he writes he's extremely clever, but also very accessible, and paints wonderful pictures. So
can you kind of summarize, and I know that we're going to talk to Ross about this too, but summarize what the essence of this play is about,
It's about a regular guy who gets involved in extraordinary circumstances, that lead him down a path where no one will listen to him. And he is an innocent man who is in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it just snowballs, and he finds himself on death row.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, it's heavy, it's gritty, it's emotional, but it's also very relevant. Although the character is fictitious, it very well could be ripped from today's headlines.
And now, were you, as the director, was there any sort of workshopping of this? Like, were you presented with a full narrative with all the songs? How did the creative process work for those listeners that are interested in that?
Well, what I first did was speak with Ross and see if we connected. And, you know, it was important to me that he connect with me so that we would be on the same page, because our relationship is extremely collaborative, because not only is he performing it, but he wrote it. And so in order to get inside his head, I wanted to make sure that he could get inside mine as well.
Right, right, right.
And we actually did a workshop of this for a week in June. The first thing we did was we did three songs, mm-hmm. and that was before June. I did three songs and presented my ideas to him. And then from there, we decided to travel on to a workshop. And we did a week-long workshop where we did sort of a bare-bones presentation of the whole show, where Gary Grossman came, Susie Dietz came, and we all sort of sat around and decided what the next step was. And Ross and I were connecting to the material. Our ideas were collaborative. We were on the same page. So then we decided to move forward and make it a full production.
Okay.
It's been in the works for me. It's been in the works for Ross for a very long time. For me, it's been in the works about 2 years.
Well, I was very intrigued to hear the premise, because I'm not a fan of musicals. I love musicals, but I love gritty musical content even more. I always refer to it as I like my music with the stems and the seeds still in it.
This is very gritty. It's very dark, and it's being presented in a way that's very untraditional. We're using video. We're using projected images. We have live performances. I have a dancer in the show. Jennifer Brazel is dancing in the show as well as acting. Christopher Hoffman and Craig Lucas are also in the show. Our videographer, Mike Hoy, took wonderful, wonderful video of them.
So it's like a multimedia thing, too.
It's completely multimedia.
How big is the cast?
The cast is four people. It's Ross singing. He's on stage with his guitar the entire time, mm-hmm. completely acoustic singing. And then Jennifer Brazel is acting in it, and Christopher Hoffman and Craig Lucas are in projected images and video images that Michael Hoy took.
Wow.
And Adam Fleming is doing the content in terms of putting it together and doing projections. And I worked with Adam on When You Wish. We have a wonderful lighting designer. Jared Sayag is doing the lights, who I've worked with before. Jeff McLaughlin is doing the set. So we have just an incredible team. Darren Morrow is doing the sound.
And this is a new venue that it's in, or just a new theater company there?
It's the Skylight Theater that's been there forever, but it's their inaugural season.
Okay. I see.
New theater company has developed.
Is that the place on Vermont? Is there a little? Is there a little cafe attached to that, or am I thinking of another place? I guess I must be.
Something, you're not thinking of the Acme Theater on Vine Street?
No, this is on Vermont.
Okay,
There are two spaces. There's a small space and then a bigger space.
Okay.
Yes.
There are cafes right next to there.
Okay, that's probably okay. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
There's
yeah.
cafes all around.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but not connected. There's a bookstore connected to it.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I wasn't really sure. You just looked at me like I was stoned or something.
No, I didn't.
Would you think I'd really be that off from Vermont and Acme on La Brea? I have lived
I
in this
know.
City. You gave me that look. You're on daycare, aren't you?
Really, I am.
You've been shooting NyQuil this morning.
I have been.
You're
Zycam. I am. Zycam and
now, NyQuil. Lee, for you, what is your? You've as we mentioned earlier, you've choreographed and you've directed. I realize it's probably a silly question, but which? What do you prefer? I mean, the processes, of course, are very, very different. Do you like? Given your choice, do you prefer to do both on one production?
I really like storytelling, and however I can do that is how I like to do it. Mm. And what I love about this project is everything is so integrated, and you just have to come and see it. You can't really define what everybody's done on this project. It's so collaborative.
And we also don't want to talk the whole thing out so that there's no surprises when you go, too.
Exactly. But it's this this show is so emotional, it will hit everybody at a different place on a different level. And even though it deals with one man's journey, it's also very relevant. It's very political, and it's got a lot going on in it.
And a lot of the times, though, that's why you embrace things more, is because it's one man's journey.
Yes.
One of the things that we were discussing, because the Oscar nominations just came out, yeah, and we were talking about my wife and I were talking about the nominations, and I personally didn't care for American Hustle especially, and the reason that I didn't was because I felt that Christian Bale's character, it was like a football game, uh-huh, and Christian Bale's character was the ball,
right.
And
right.
we really had to stay with him to really experience that journey that he took, and whenever they strayed from him, the way it was structured, you didn't have that strength of narrative. You weren't as committed to it. So I always like to hear things like that, you know, that it's about, you know, that it's one person's journey. And also I like to hear that it's a small cast, because then, you know, especially with a musical, that you're getting the cream of the crop of that distilled cast.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Didn't American Hustle take the Golden Globe for Best Picture?
Yeah, and I wanted to like jump off something high.
Yeah, it was kind of an upset. I mean, it didn't win anything all evening long or something like that, and then it won that.
Yeah, but I was happy to see that Cate Blanchett got recognized, because her performance in Blue Jasmine was unbelievable.
I did not see that, but I was disappointed that Emma Thompson didn't get more recognition for Saving Mr. Banks.
Yeah.
And or the film. Have you seen it?
Saving Mr. Banks. No, you recommended it, but I haven't seen it yet.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, gosh, go see it.
But I will see it.
I'm still recovering from Nebraska. Nebraska was just like...
Nebraska was
astonishing.
Astonishing, yes.
Though I thought that Emma Thompson was very elegant looking on the Golden Globes.
But inside Llewyn Davis...
Even when she threw her shoes?
Yeah. I think she just had a little bit too much of that martini at that point.
But.
Oh, as opposed to Jacqueline Bisset, who is hungry. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Oh, that's why I was a blather.
I was
hungry, and my comment to that was, yes, I got hungry every weekend in college, until I got a DWF, which is driving while famished. You know,
right. I interviewed her not too long ago.
Did you?
Interesting woman.
We have a track, but you know what? What I'm going to do is, we have a track, and I'd like to play a good chunk of it. So I think what we'll do is we'll tease a little bit of the song that we have from Wrong Man, and then we'll be able to play the remainder of it off the air.
Sure.
And then that way we'll get to hear more of it. Because it always bothers me that we play like 20 seconds of these things, and then it's just, you know, it's not enough. So let's give that a listen.
And this, of course, is the star himself singing this.
Yes, it is. And I have Wrong Man here as the title, but is that the name of this track? Is it The Wrong Man?
Yes.
Okay. I don't. The questions get harder as we continue.
Okay.
Okay, let's...
I'm not sure which track you had.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. All right. Let's give it a...
I'll take your word for it.
Let's give it a listen. This is from The Wrong Man.
Singing this song, man, the wrong man. The wrong man is singing this song, man, the wrong man. How many ways can you say I won't wait? How many times can you mention I'll see an extension? There are only 90 days to the execution day. Give me a stay. Don't make me a statistical anomaly. It wasn't me who shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. Was it the same casino, but it was another guy? A Folsom prisoner admitted he committed the crime. Now I'm serving his time, yeah, my life is on the line. An eye for an eye, sure, a tooth for a tooth, sure. But I'm not the one lying, I've only told the truth, sir. When I told the jury I'm an innocent man, I swore on my grave. The witness pointed out the wrong man, the wrong man is singing this song, man, the wrong man. The wrong man is singing this song, man, the wrong man.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I know. I'm
love the
hook now.
What's that? Yeah, and I love the the pulse beat of it. It has yes. that sound. And I especially love the two little nods to Johnny Cash in there that I heard.
That's a big influence, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, just that's really, really lovely. That's
and you
really
have a wonderful lovely. Voice. I mean, that's an immediate connection right there. It just kind of pulls you right in.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's very voice. Charged. It's very charged.
And a great presence as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I really enjoyed that. Well, now we're going to let people know how they can, I mean, we know how we're going to tell people how they could see it, but we're also going to tell them how they could potentially see it for free.
Yes.
Michael, give the stats, if you would, on how people could purchase tickets, and then I'll tell them what tweeting will entitle them to.
All right. Well, for purchasing tickets for the Skylight Theater, at the Skylight Theater, I should say, The Wrong Man, and you simply go to, the tickets, by the way, are $15 for previews. Wow, that's a terrific price. And a regular performance of $30 on Fridays and Sunday, $34 on Saturday.
Still
tickets,
great.
Tickets are available online at Skylight, SKYLIGHT, TIX.com, SkylightTix.com, or by telephone at 213-761-7061. And the Skylight Theater is located at 1816 and a half North Vermont Avenue in Los Angeles.
And before we chat with the other half of the show that we have here, we're going to tell our listeners, we have a little gift of sorts for them, compliments of the producers of I'm the Wrong Man. This is the first 8 listeners who tweet the message, I'm the Wrong Man, to Skylight, to at Skylight THTR, will receive preview tickets to the show. This tweeting thing that the kids do. I actually do tweet, and I have no effing clue what I'm doing. I still haven't figured it out. So again, it's tweet the message, I'm the Wrong Man, to at Skylight THTR. First 8 will receive preview tickets to the show, and I'm assuming that each of the tweeters, as it were, get a pair of
yes,
tickets.
Yeah,
I would assume.
Yeah, but
because you don't send people one
correct
ticket.
Assumption. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I don't think that. I don't want to give
nobody
away.
Nobody goes stag.
I don't want to give away the house. Well, no. It is about it is about a guy at death row. So going by yourself
all the people
could be heroically yeah. depressing. So not at the show, just for the
yes,
person in the
course,
audience.
Of course.
But that sounds very, very interesting. So
we have Lee for another few minutes here before we wrap up this segment of the show. But Lee, now let's talk about some other of the great things you've done in your career. What can you do? You have a top 5 up to this point of things that you have done that you were your favorite moments of working in theater?
Oh, that's such a hard question. I probably do, but I can't think of them now that you put me on the spot. You know, I sort of fall in love with everything I'm doing at the time.
You do,
I'm
don't
doing
you?
It. Yeah, yeah, I do. I do. Right now, this is, you know, the top 5 for me. What I'm doing right now takes all 5 spots.
I think it's what's interesting about what we all do, actually, but people specifically like Lee and or your colleagues who are just directing the show, you're choreographing, mm-hmm. but it's you go from show to show, and you inherit a new family of people that you become very quickly attached to in a very short amount of time.
Right, you have to, you sort and of you live have and to learn how
them.
To do that, right.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it's opening night, and you're moving on, and they are staying. And
well, some you carry with you physically, and some you just carry in your heart.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny you mention that, because I remember when I did shows, whether it was in high school or just out of high school when I was much younger, and I just remember that the show would run for like 4 weeks, and when it was over, it was devastating. It was really devastating that you just thought that the world was coming to an end because you weren't going to be able to perform with these people anymore. And it was just a great example of how those, bonds form very quickly when you're all sort of on the ice together.
Right.
You know?
I think there's a little separation anxiety at the end of those situations.
As a director and a choreographer, your separation happens sooner. It happens opening night.
Right.
You know? And then usually you have another project to move on to, so you're able to channel your energy somewhere else. But, every project has a special place in your heart. Very few you want to forget, but,
Right, and Lee, it was such a lovely thing that Lee and I had the pleasure to work together on the Disney musical that we referenced earlier in the show. Because that really was a labor of love, not only by its composer, who was a wonderful man that had this dream for 18 years to put this show together, and then he came upon Lee Martino and Larry Rabin, who was the director of the show, and it totally took on a different kind of a life, not necessarily the one that he had envisioned, but with their help, it came to the surface and became a full musical.
I tell you, when I saw that show, I was there on an unlucky night, not for the show, but for the logistics of it. It turned out that they did not promote, they didn't have the date, the matinee that I saw on the online calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't promoted.
Oh.
Like the evening show was sold out or something, but the afternoon show had no one, because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't promoted. It was a very, very small house. And what was so astonishing to me was that I've never seen a musical that was so non-reliant on that contagion or that energy, because even though it was a small house, it was a standing ovation, and they just burned it down. Everyone who was in it just was as committed to that material as if it was packed to the rafters, and it was very, very impressive. That's one of the reasons I dug the
show
so much.
Absolutely. Well,
I think everyone was excited about that show, as we are about this one, because you get to create something from the beginning.
Exactly.
You don't have to think about the tradition of the show.
Right.
And
you have
that.
More possession and emotional investment in it.
Yeah, and you have a chance to have more creativity.
Yeah. Very, very true. Very, very true. Let's move on to Ross, shall we, Michael?
Let's do.
And
yes.
Would you mind giving him his...
It would be a pleasure.
Intro.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a multi-platinum selling songwriter from the north suburbs of Chicago. He has garnered a reputation as a razor-edged lyricist and astute cross-pollinator of pop and hip-hop. First with an album called Ross Golan and Molehead, and then in a collaboration with Tommy Walter as Glacier Hiking. Recently, he has worked nonstop as a songwriter for hire with such artists as Nicki Minaj, CeeLo Green, Lady Antebellum, Justin Bieber, Keith Urban, who I really like, and Maroon 5, who I really like, and Demi Lovato. So will you please welcome once again Ross Golan.
Oh!
Hell yeah!
That's totally the music I write.
Thank you so much for not saying what some of our guests have, which is, oh, CSI. It's like, no.
Way. Oh, that's so
offensive. Do.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
How are you?
I'm lovely.
You are lovely. And what a lovely song we just heard.
Yes, we'll hear more of shortly. So, jumping right into it.
Sure.
Did you have the idea... for the narrative of the show, first, did you have a collection of songs first and then decide to string them together? How did the whole thing come to fruition for you?
Well, I wrote the first song, The Raw Man, in about 2004. I had just released my first album, and we were on tour, and I wrote that song, and we would play it live, and it was everyone's favorite song. It was around a time when I was really sort of studying up on Johnny Cash and Merle Haggard and some of these traditional country writers. And I thought it was fascinating that Folsom Prison Blues gave you such empathy for a convicted felon like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was interesting that there are so many people coming from a very corrupt state like Illinois, where so many people had been executed for later being exonerated.
Yeah.
And so I thought it would be interesting to tell the perspective from, well, what about another guy who might be up for the same crime? What if basically Johnny Cash frames him for this murder? So I wrote that first song with the idea of, wait a minute, I'm not even the guy who did this. There's another guy out there who's admitted to doing this. So I wrote this story from the perspective of an average guy who's been convicted for the same crime, and it was compelling enough to the audience that I felt the need to start writing maybe a little bit of backstory on this guy. And about 8 years later, 9 years later, now we're about to put it up. But it has taken on many lives, and I never recorded it. That's the only recording I have of any of the songs. But I've played it in houses for the last 4 years, and people would host them, and I would do these sort of dinner parties where I would develop the material without realizing I was really workshopping.
Right, yeah.
And I would add songs, take songs out, and...
Like a stand-up, honing material.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But I ended up, performing it in Sydney and New York, and...
But see, Chicago, I love hearing things like that, that the strength of one song was enough to build a sound. Like one of my favorite songs from when I was a child was an old Bobby Gentry tune called Ode to Billy Joe.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. And that is one of those songs that is such an intriguing song by itself. Like, it asks so much more questions than it answers.
Yeah.
That became a full... a full film. It was a made-for-TV movie that Max Baer directed. Same thing, I'm a huge Tom Waits fan.
Tom
Waits had that song off of Swordfish Trombones called Frank's Wild Years, and that became a full narrative album story. So it's always interesting to me that a song can have enough emotional content to be a springboard into a full story.
I describe this often as being a mix between Tom Waits and R. Kelly on acoustic guitar.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's got a lot of the relevant sound of what we would think of as pop, R&B-ish kind of music on acoustic guitar, and yet it tells stories, lyrically speaking, very similar to how Tom Waits would maybe tell it.
Yes, but like in that track that we played, it has a very sort of angular kind of sharp-edged finish. This is a real signature type of Waits, you know, sound, a little junkyard orchestra kind of sound.
And that's why I like how acoustic it is.
Yeah.
And how it this easily could have been recorded many ways.
Right.
They could be filmed in many ways. It really hasn't been until this process that we've ever been able to put real visuals to it that made sense. I mean, the music had to be right. I mean, we were changing lyrics as of last week. I mean, I'm constantly, you know, trying to make it right. But it wasn't until Lee and Susie that we've really made it into something tangible.
Well, what you said, the different ways of potentially recording the songs, I mean, I would think that the whole sort of, and I don't want to say, I say a sort of a Spartan nature with only the biggest compliment in that. Because, you know, if it were Lush or any, I mean, it's a one-man story.
Right.
So I sort of like that sort of. Is there, what is the instrumentation of the performance? Is it just you and
just
guitar?
Just me and an acoustic guitar the entire time.
Russ, how old are you?
33.
You don't look.
I'm 20,
look
26. I mean. Wait, how old was Cheetah?
36.
Oh, she's 36. Oh, yeah. I got time. I'm 33.
I think you're an old soul.
That's what my mother says.
Yeah, I think you are. That's the vibe I get from you.
I like that.
Yeah, I like it too. So, and I know this was going to be right up your alley. When I heard the song last night, when it came to me on my email, I thought Paul's going to dig into this.
Yeah.
You know, in an era where something like In the Heights can work.
Mm-hmm.
Or Passing Strange can work. And you can have something like, as a songwriter, my career has gotten a lot better since there have been fewer aisles in stores.
Right.
You know, when there's less fewer genres that we can place things in, it starts to become an experience where you specifically download that kind of song or that artist, that kind of artist. And I think what gives this show unique legs is that it's different, but it's the right era and generation to accept something as out as this is.
Right. And also it's like that compartmentalization sort of forces people to stamp a label on people. It's like some of my favorite artists, they don't really fit. Like, if you went into Tower Records, then it would be, you know, rock and pop. And they just take everyone who can't fit a category and throw them in alternative, which is where Tom Waits is, which is where Leonard Cohen is, which is where Loudon Wainwright is. And those to me are the most interesting performers that can't be defined like that.
Right.
We mentioned Waits and obviously Johnny Cash. What are some of your other influences or people that whose work you really appreciate and admire?
Well, I'm more of I like the kind of lyrics that are specific but tell a story.
Right.
I would rather put myself in the Tom Waits, Phil Oakes category than the Bob Dylan category. Right. I mean, hey, if I'm putting myself in this category,
I could decide on my category.
In the same way, I would rather be Eminem than Jay-Z.
Right.
I would rather be some of these lyricists have a lot of color, and they're abstract, and it's about feel, and it's about sort of what the artist is feeling. Right. I take the approach of I'd rather pull someone through a story and force them to listen. there's a math to songwriting, and if you can, and there's just as equal of a math in lyric writing. And there's a way to keep a listener intrigued and keep them invested in throughout an entire song.
Right. You must do that full hilt for somebody like Justin Bieber, right?
But you'd be surprised. I mean, even something that is so conversational as a Justin Bieber song, it's hard to write conversationally and simply and manage to write something that's still unique.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Writing something unique and familiar is very difficult. And so someone, you know, when we write for the exceptional pop or whatever, I'm just writing a song on acoustic guitar or piano. And then they want to cut the song. So we could have a number of places for these songs to go. But for us, it's, you know, I don't care if Justin wants to cut the song. Yeah, okay, well, it ended up on 2 number one Billboard albums because he wanted to cut that song. I didn't know that that's who was going to cut the song.
Right.
You know what I mean? But you definitely see that even in what's seemingly as simple as that kind of writing, it's because I grew up doing musical theater, as in Deerfield, Illinois, doing a new genre every 4 months in one of those new productions with my friends, that I learned to write for a Nicki Minaj and then a Lady Antebellum. Or, you know, you learn to write a good song with melodies that are unique, that are memorable, lyrics that are memorable. And then it doesn't matter what the genre is. You know?
One of my favorite Tom Waits quotes, which you would not attribute to Tom Waits because he's not exactly known for this particular song style, but he once said, the singing in the car songs are the most difficult ones to come up with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just, yeah. We're talking about songs, but we're talking about a show too, and I want to make sure that we get this information out there again. This is The Wrong Man, written and performed by Ross Golan, and we have Ross here along with director Lee Martino. This opens January 25th, and this is at the Skylight Theater at 1816 and a half North Vermont Avenue in Los Angeles. Tickets, skylighttix.com, or you can call on the phone 213-761-7061. That's 213-761-7061. We're not done, of course. I just wanted to make sure we got that information out before the end of the
Keep plugging it.
Sounds wonderfully exciting.
Plug it. Oh, you know what? And let's remind people about those tickets. Let me find I don't have that that tweet handy, Michael. Maybe you do. I don't have it here in front of me.
But I don't. You didn't put it in my...
No, it's in yours. Book. It's is just it? Tucked in. There we go. Here it is. The first 8 listeners who tweet. See, I told you. Tweeting, and I'm just
be
like...
Be careful how you
I
say
sit
there,
in the corner drooling like an idiot. Tweet, I'm the wrong man, too, at Skylight, THTR. And the first 8 people who do that will receive preview tickets to the show.
And those previews, of course, are January 25th.
No, the previews are before that.
No, those are the previews. Are
I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay.
I think officially opening night will be February 8th.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I did have it right.
Two
so it doesn't
previews,
open. It,
2 weekends.
The date that I gave is actually the beginning of previews.
Exactly. Yeah.
You see, tweeting throws me.
The very idea of tweeting.
Let's play a little bit more of that.
Absolutely.
I want to play that track a little bit more because I really enjoy it.
And then
that.
We have to baptize our guests.
And then we'll baptize them. We'll give them a moment to think about some onstage disasters that they can share with us.
Yeah.
This is a continuation of the track that we played earlier from The Wrong Man.
Wait, how many times can you mention I'll see an extension? There are only 60 days to the execution. Day, give me a stay. Don't make me a statistical anomaly. The wrong man is singing this song, man. The wrong man. A statistical anomaly. When I first got to this prison and I first got in this position, news ran and a man made it a mission to spread a statewide petition. The Republican governor announced he refused to listen. Said the victim won't return and this'll teach me a lesson. If you were in my shoes, you would beg to be free too. I got less than 2 months until I die. Tell me, what can I do? I'm not giving up until my blood runs dry. try. How many ways can you say I won't wait? How many times can you mention I'll see an extension? There are only 30 days to the execution day. Give me a stay. Don't make me a statistical anomaly. People picketing, protesting the system. Police ticketing those trying to get them to listen. I pretend to hear the voices chanting, let him be free. But in reality, it's been silent for 23 weeks. I'm refusing my last meal. I killed nobody. How can they blast potassium chloride in my body? It's why I pleaded not guilty. I killed nobody. Get me out of here. Listen, I didn't kill anybody. How many ways can you say I won't wait? How many times can you mention I'll see an extension? There's only a day to the execution day. Give me a stay. Don't make me a statistical anomaly. The wrong man is singing this song, man. The wrong man. If you were in my shoes, the wrong man is singing this song, man. The wrong man. You would beg to be free too. The wrong man is singing this song, man. The wrong man.
Oh yeah, I dig
super
that.
Super cool.
I dig
super
that.
Super cool. Yeah.
And Russ, what did you say? We had the mics off while we were playing.
That was one take because I knew we were trying to record a version of it so we could use it for promo purposes. And it's really interesting listening to it because I mean it was a one kind of pass sort of thing. And I'm used to recording stuff that takes days to record.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's sort of jarring to hear it back because you guys are officially the first people to ever hear any sort of recorded version.
Oh, really?
So it was a world premiere, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there you go.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Very nice.
I really enjoy that. I'm going to enjoy this show when I see it.
Me too.
We are at the 5-minute mark.
Yes,
so let's,
we are.
Michael, you want to share what we...
Well, of course, all of our guests, Paul, that come through, State of the Arts, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who listen to the show know this. We always end the show with asking our guests to kind of recant some sort of situation in their careers that was funny or embarrassing. Something happened. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the theater. It could be in a film or television. But
or in a club.
Or in a club, yeah. Something that was unusual, interesting, awkward, embarrassing, funny, not funny. Whatever you want to share with us. So we'll start with Ross.
We'll start with Ross. Or yeah. Lee, who's got one? Let's start with that. Who's got one at the...
I got one.
Ross has got one.
Yeah.
I was on tour. This was when my old band was a two-man band. We're driving up to Mammoth, and we're playing at some ski lodge, and we're driving up, and the night before, we decide on the drive, like, well, let's get a box of Cheez-Its. Well, you know, I'm slightly lactose intolerant. This is not a good idea. Sure enough, the next day, we're on stage, and we're using a lot of loops, and the music drops out. And I turn around and the guy's gone that's in my band. I don't even know where he went. I mean, nobody's really watching us anyway. So he just took off. And then I was like, oh, I'm not feeling so good either. I just remember this one note, just having to hit this note. It's like, won't you sit? And I had to like stop and hold and clench as hard as I could because something was wrong. And I just bolted off stage and I left. And like, sure enough, there's just a loop going on stage and both of us are gone. And no one really, I mean, nobody was paying attention to us anyway, you know? So who cares? But that is a true story.
That's what happened to Milli Vanilli, I think.
Yeah. Isn't that what it was? Jesus. You realize real quick how high certain notes are when you're trying to. to keep it in your,
Oh, that's very similar to similar to the story that the guy from Celebration Theater, Michael Shepard, told, which people, our listeners, will have to go back into the archives to find that one.
Yeah.
Lee, you have one for us?
You know, a lot of my stories involve broken bones of dancers.
Well,
You know, but they've always healed. I just remember when I was performing, hitting a musical director in the head with my shoe when it fell off when I did a kick. In that same show, there was a passerelle, and I had to walk around the passerelle, and it was...
What is a passerelle?
It's like a ramp outside that encompasses the orchestra. And it was Hello, Dolly, and I had a huge dress on, and as I walked by the bass player, it got stuck on his bow.
Oh.
And I took his bow with me. So in that same show, I hit the conductor in the head with my shoe. Amazing. And I took the bow of him.
You know, that's a performance yeah. that comes yeah. off the stage.
Yes, it does. And this is why I don't perform anymore.
Well, you just can't afford the insurance.
Yeah. No, I can't. Oh. Yep.
Where was that? Where was that?
It was at San Gabriel. San Gabriel Civic Light Opera. And it was Hello, Dolly.
Who was playing Dolly? Do you have any idea? Remember?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember.
Gary Coleman, actually.
Was oh,
Gary?
Yes.
It was Gary. Yes.
It wasn't Carol Channing, but...
Yeah.
But well, I have stories of her, too. Yeah,
we
love Carol Channing.
We had Carol Channing on our second broadcast.
It's hilarious. Here,
and it was hilarious. Listeners, go back and listen to it, because it is the audio train wreck of the ages.
Well, you have to tell it.
She's on a speaker phone. Hearing is not Miss Channing's strong suit that much anymore. They were on a speaker, and her husband
was there.
And we didn't
even know he was going to be on. We just thought we were talking to her.
And we ended up with, we introduced her and all this, and we talked for about 5 minutes, and then she says, so when am I going to be on the radio?
Oh,
so
like, sweet.
You've been on for 5 minutes. Oh, hello. You know, she was adorable, but she can't hear us. We couldn't hear her, and we were nervous because we were still getting our sea legs. It was only our second broadcast. This was after Carol Lawrence was here a week before, got stuck on the elevator, and 2 minutes into the show, dumped a bottle of water in her lap, was sitting in water the entire show.
Gorgeous. Gown, dressed, you know, to the nines, makeup, full, everything, and sat in that puddle of water for 45 minutes.
She's another trooper. I've worked with her, too. She's another
trooper. Unfortunately, we're out of time, and I want to make sure we get this out here one more time.
Yes.
The Cheetah Rivera Show. It's January 25th at Valley Performing Arts Center, and it's January 26th at Huff Performing Arts Center in Glendora. And send good thoughts out to those folks in Glendora who are dealing with the fire up there. And for the production at the Skylight Theater Company, The Wrong Man, written and performed by Ross Golan and directed by Lee Martino. Tickets for that, skylightticks.com or 213-761-7061. What a pleasure
Absolutely.
It was.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for doing this, and come back and see us again. You can always come and play with us.
Please do.
Thank you.
All right.
And Ross, do you have a website that people can follow you individually, or a Facebook or something?
You can always go to my Twitter, and just it's twitter.com.
Twitter. Now, what would that be?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm elderly.
Ross.
Okay.
R-O-S-S-G-O-L-A.
All right. There we go. Really enjoyed it.
All right, Paul, thank you. See you on the radio.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.